Trendstorm. Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Nicaragua. Is the Ortega era almost over? The escalating regime change violence in the Central American country of Nicaragua has thrown the future of Daniel Ortega's presidency into doubt. Trump trade tariffs. Bye-bye to big trade blocks. Trump's imposition of his promised steel and aluminum tariffs has sparked outrage from America's economic allies, endangering the prospective transatlantic trade and investment partnership and potentially spelling the end of NAFTA. And also, Jordan, IMF, unrest. The Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan was struck by a sudden but intense wave of protest after a proposed IMF-influenced tax bill threatened to make the country's dire economic situation even more unbearable for its nearly 10 million citizens. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is the deadly spree of unrest in Nicaragua. The escalating regime change violence in the Central American country of Nicaragua has thrown the future of Daniel Ortega's presidency into doubt. The former Sandinista rebel leader is facing his greatest challenge yet since returning to office in 2007 after having previously presided over Nicaragua following the 1979 revolution up until the end of the Cold War. Armed groups originally took to the streets in April to supposedly protest the apolitical issue of Social Security reform, though they quickly resorted to killing police officers and calling for the overthrow of the government after initiating a few provocations against the authorities in order to craft the pretext for legitimizing their demands. The fast-moving events saw the government responsibly walk back its reform plans as a de-escalation measure, but this inadvertently emboldened the regime change militants to press ahead with their cause after sensing what they interpreted to be state weakness. Complicating matters even further is that various international NGOs are reportedly involved in organizing the unrest, which might end up being used to justify future U.S. sanctions under the so-called Nicaraguan Investment Conditionality Act, or NICA, of 2017. From the looks of it, the U.S. might be planning to transplant the Venezuelan hybrid war template onto Nicaragua in order to overthrow yet another multipolar leftist populist government with all of its disastrous humanitarian consequences. Disturbingly, the Cold War era shadow of the infamous Contra campaign of death squad terrorism is looming heavy over the region as the hybrid war in Nicaragua intensifies and threatens to lead to a refugee crisis that could destabilize the fragile northern triangle states of Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras if it continues to worsen. This chain reaction of chaos could also imperil the U.S.'s own security by leading to a flood of migrants into the country, including gang members and militants who try to infiltrate it under that cover, just like what happened during the El Salvadorian Civil War a few decades ago in creating the forerunner of MS-13. Unlike during the old Cold War, where Nicaragua could depend on Cuban and Soviet assistance in defending itself against U.S.-backed fighters, this time it's comparatively on its own in this developing new Cold War conflict, though that shouldn't be taken to mean that victory is unattainable. Folks, what's happening in Nicaragua has definitely begun to draw some attention, but it's the wrong type of attention in the sense that the mainstream media is beating the drums of regime change in the Central American country. So I'm very pleased to announce that we're going to have two Latin American guests on our program who are going to present a different angle on what's happening. The first one is Mr. Nino Paglizia. He's a Venezuelan author of Cuba Solidarity in Canada, 5 decades of people-to-people foreign relations, and he's also a retired researcher from the University of British Columbia.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Nino, how responsible are foreign NGOs for sparking the original unrest that was carried out under the cover of protesting Social Security reform and then facilitating its evolution to the deadly regime change violence that we see today?
Well, based on my observation, more than foreign NGOs, we have Nicaraguan NGOs that are encouraged and financed by a foreign state, namely the U.S. The National Endowment for Democracy, NED, is infamous for funding programs and NGOs in about 90 countries. NED has a reputation of being an arm of the CIA. In 2017 alone, NED financed 13 different programs in Nicaragua, supporting individuals and civil society organizations to the tune of about $1.2 million. NED finances training projects with great sounding goals, like to empower youth leaders and civil society activists and to promote democratic values and online independent media, to name just some of the projects. This is in Nicaragua with U.S. taxpayers' money. The head of the Coordinadora Civil, which is an anti-Sandinista federation of civil groups in Nicaragua, has publicly attributed the violent protests in Managua to the years of training in values and principles through seminars and courses in leadership, precisely the kind that NED financed. The Coordinadora Civil is calling to a national strike in Nicaragua with roadblocks all over the country. And we know that roadblocks are happening right now.
Okay, Nino, well, what patterns do you see between the developing hybrid war in Nicaragua and the years-long one that's been waged against Venezuela? And how likely is it that the same tactics used against Caracas, sanctions, regional pressure, and sabotage, will also be employed against Managua?
There are very similar patterns between the hybrid wars on Venezuela and Nicaragua, as if they were following a script. We should not be surprised at the similarities in hybrid wars on the two countries, because both countries are similar in their social commitments. The goal is also the same, regime change. The initial protests quickly escalated to violent sprees, calling the president a dictator and calling for early elections. We have also seen similar photographs of violence, escorting of public buses, attacks on public buildings, use of similar homemade weapons by masked individuals and terrorizing of people. Luckily, we have not seen burning of people alive in Nicaragua, although there has been tragic loss of lives in both countries as a result of violence. The violence persisted in spite of the government restraint to use force and in spite of the continued call from the respective governments to peace and dialogue, which have been disregarded. Now, will there be possible sanctions? Well, there the similarities end. I think the OAS resolution on Nicaragua of just 2 days ago answers that question. The OAS resolution did not blame Ortega's government for the violence. Instead, it was a declaration of support for the people of Nicaragua and a call to engage in peaceful negotiations. Therefore, no sanctions are in sight for now. But it is important to understand why the OAS and the U.S. has been so lenient. By and large, Ortega has been quite compliant to international pressure. Unlike Maduro, Ortega has backed down on the social security reforms and has opened the door to the OAS Inter-American Commission of Human Rights to conduct an observer mission to Nicaragua just last month. But most importantly, Ortega has just agreed to cooperate with the OAS to jointly conduct electoral reforms in Nicaragua. Now, this is clearly a response to the threat posed by the Nicaraguan Investment Conditionality Act of 2017, which is meant to oppose loans at international financial institutions unless the government of Nicaragua takes effective steps to hold free, fair, and transparent elections. As for regional pressure and sabotage, well, we have to watch the genie unleashed out by from the bottle by NED, the Nicaraguan NGOs.
Okay, I see. Very interesting. Thanks a lot for explaining that for us, Nino. Now, the blowback from the CIA's covert involvement in the Guatemalan, El Salvadorian, and Nicaraguan civil wars led to a migrant crisis that ultimately made it easier for gang members, who in some cases were former militants, and drugs to enter the U.S. So, Nino, what could be the regional security implications from the current hybrid war in Nicaragua?
I think that for some of the reasons mentioned before, there is no immediate danger of a migrant crisis in Nicaragua. That can change depending on the internal pressure that might develop to push Nicaraguans to leave. We have seen that in the case of Venezuela, although the majority of those who left for the U.S., Canada, or Europe were the most affluent Venezuelans, others were shown to cross the border to Colombia. In terms of security implications, Nicaragua does not represent a danger like Guatemala or El Salvador in terms of gang. Nicaragua is usually perceived as a safer country, even though it is on the drugs path towards the U.S. In fact, Nicaragua has been called Central America's security exception. And one of the reasons is that Nicaragua went through a genuine Sandinista revolution, which included the reform of the security system together with building more trust between the police and civilians. Unfortunately, a hybrid war on Nicaragua can produce disastrous humanitarian consequences, as you mentioned, as hybrid wars usually do everywhere.
Nino, this was priceless insight into what's going on behind the scenes in Nicaragua and how this hybrid war could potentially boomerang back against the U.S.'s own security interests. So thanks again for coming on the program. Now we're going to switch over and hear what Mr. Eldon Cruz has to say. Eldon is a communication strategist currently based in Honduras, where he does regional political analysis.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Eldon, Nicaragua is the second poorest country in the hemisphere, so there are obviously pre-existing economic and structural problems that could inspire protests from time to time, but why do these latest ones so quickly become violent and lead to near instantaneous calls for regime change that continue to this day?
Very honored to talk to your audience again, Andrew. Nicaragua right now, you can see the elements of an armed insurgency being directed to a violent confrontation with the government of President Ortega. So if you ask yourself, you know, the obliged question, cui bono, who benefits? It leads you to the speculation, at least, that those who benefit from the destabilization of Nicaragua are those directly opposed to its active participation in what we may call the multipolar group of countries. Will be those pushing for an alternative global economic project. This is different from the one that the so-called G7 countries have so far been forcing upon the world. As per usual, there are certain organizations, NGOs, and others involved in providing money and logistics to fuel the confrontation. So this is an element of foreign intervention. Now, how do you do this? How do you blend in? Well, we have seen it around the world. They proceed by appropriating or, you know, kidnapping, sequestering what we may recognize as, you know, a few legitimate grievances of the people to their governments, as it always happens in the playbook of the so-called common revolutions. Iraq, Libya, Syria, Venezuela. This is how it is happening in Nicaragua as well. It started because President Ortega proposed a financial reform to the social security system. Segments of the Nicaraguan population felt it unfair to pensioners. So there was a legitimate peaceful protest at the beginning. But overall, Andrew, this is not an issue that will naturally on its own lead to such violent confrontation. The Nicaraguan public had no need to weaponize the protest. Then President Ortega canceled the proposed reform a few days later. So something strange is afoot in Nicaragua, say the least.
Yeah, there definitely seems to be some type of external force at play inspiring these protests and guiding them in a certain direction. Now, Eldon, no two conflicts are ever the same, even if they do appear to share a lot in common, but comparing the present conflict with the previous Contra one, what do you think the odds are that it'll take on larger proportions and come to involve the U.S. directly supporting its proxies from regional bases, just like what happened a few decades ago during the Reagan era?
It's unfortunately very possible, Andrew. The U.S. has several military bases in Honduras, some of them very close to the border with Nicaragua. So the logistical requirements are there, just like during the Reagan era. But also, here's the thing. We are not on the Reagan era anymore. So taking on larger proportions so as to make it a full-blown a full-blown Cuban war, an armed Cuban war, will come at the very heavy price of completely destabilizing the so-called Northern Triangle region. You will start with the already very toxic Honduras, a country mired in violent political confrontation, an economic nightmare with an imperial currency losing value by the hour, and a social time bomb with almost no investment, no job creation, and a crushing 65% of population being destroyed by abject poverty. Projects here will immediately flare up against the Honduran region, which will respond with full violence against the population. That's a given. As for El Salvador, under the government of the FMLN, which is another multipolar political party opposed by the U.S., the effect will actually be that people will rally behind the government in solidarity with Nicaragua, which will ensure its continuation and will reduce the stakes for foreign influence. As for Guatemala, it will perhaps not get too involved at the beginning, but it will face a lot of problems from an explosion of Honduran immigrants, just like Mexico will it now. Ultimately, the U.S. border will see an exponential surge of illegal immigrants trying to breach it. It will be a total nightmare scenario that will hurt the U.S. geopolitical agenda in Latin America. It will be far too destructive for me, Andrew.
Okay, yeah, you definitely did a great job of describing the really high stakes at play here, and you brought up some good points about how the times have changed. Now, Eldon, this current hybrid war campaign, it's clearly, in my view, from our conversation, foreign orchestrated and depends on exploiting domestic grievances for regime change purposes. So, in such a sensitive but ever deteriorating situation, how should the Nicaraguan government respond in order to confront this challenge, yet nevertheless avoid inadvertently making it worse?
There's a very delicate balance. But on the other hand, this still has been happening, for so long that I think people have started to take notes a few years ago. What can the Nicaraguan government do? Well, first, it needs to take a very careful approach to imposing law enforcement without violence to begin. It sounds easy to say. It's not easy to do. But you can still do it by employing non-aggressive, non-lethal approaches to operations. I believe it is already doing this, but it also, to me, Andrew, it needs to kick off a very organic national campaign calling for peace and dialogue, explaining to the population the huge losses the country incurs in the middle of this violence. The Nicaraguan government needs to regain the moral upper hand once again, take the initiative. As a political observer, I have come to the belief that extreme situations require extreme countermeasures. So, versus foreign intervention seeking to topple the government by way of sequestering legitimate grievances of the population, then the government must respond by sequestering the initiative. In this case, I will say it needs being willing to go beyond just the logical intention to calm down the waters. Because these are the first thing a government seeks to do. Just calm down the thing. Let's go back to normal. But sometimes it's actually impossible to go back to normal. So you will have to address, you will have to offer something unexpected as to completely flip the script. In Nicaragua, this means addressing, as I said, there are some legitimate grievances regarding a presidency that is already 11 years old, with a wide segment of the population left behind. In a past interview about Cuba, I described Cuba as the only Latin American country that was not hyper-presidentialist. The rest of them, unfortunately, are very, very hyper-presidentialist. Nicaragua is no exception. 11 years into this presidency, there are some things that need to be, exposed, explained. Something needs to open up. I will even venture to say something like a national dialogue initiative, perhaps, training governments willing to support it, creating an opportunity to engage the grievance segments of the Nicaraguan population. Or, any other idea that looks creative in the turmoil. There is ample space for improvement of the political process, and the Nicaraguan government needs to step up to the challenge. And in the end, this is a fight for the hearts and minds of the Nicaraguans and the future they want to build.
Eldon, thanks for sharing your valuable regional perspective on the latest clashes in Nicaragua, which helped give us a more comprehensive understanding of what's driving them, how far they can go, and what needs to be done to stop them.
Trendstorm.
So folks, if we think back on what both Nino and Eldon share with us today, we can see that indisputably, what's happening in Nicaragua is forward influenced, and it is a hybrid war. As Nino argued, what's happening in the Central American country reminds him a lot of what's happening in his native Venezuela. While Eldon drew a comparison between what happened in the 80s with what's occurring today. Now, granted, we're not going to over-exaggerate the scale and scope of what's happening, but nevertheless, we need to responsibly be aware of what could unfold. So, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@spoonikanews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.